through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now, you guys love the Titus and Tate podcast, first of all, and you also loved when we had them on with us last week to talk Zag, so why not bring them back ahead of this final, ahead of this championship game tonight? They're joining us right now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. First of all, how are you guys after an amazing weekend of basketball?
I am just trying to keep my head above water. It's been a busy week, emotional roller coasters, a lot of work that we're having to do, but then at the same time, you watch the game and take it in as a fan, and Jalen Suggs banks in a shot, and it's incredible. And then, you know, you try to go to bed that night, and you can't really sleep because you're so wired, but then you got to wake up early the next morning for stuff. And so it's been a whole whirlwind, and I can't think of a better way to top off a whirlwind of a week than having this national title game tonight, which is the game we've been waiting for all season, basically.
Yeah, this is the game that we've been waiting for, Gonzaga versus Baylor. It almost feels like this has been a two-year affair almost, two-season affair, where you see these two teams as really, really talented and would be a tremendous matchup and waiting on it for quite some time now. What are you guys expecting to see out of this Gonzaga-Baylor game tonight?
Yeah, I'll jump in here. I don't want to get like ahead of myself and say that we're going to see the greatest game ever, because we may have seen one of them on Saturday night, so I don't want to like put a lot of pressure on both these teams. But I will say, Titus and I have talked about this all season, and if we expect, you know, these two teams to meet the national title game, then I assume that the coaches and the players themselves probably expect it. So I think they've had each other circled for quite some time. I think there's going to be a little bit of gamesmanship and showmanship that goes into this one. I think it's going to be an awesome basketball game. And I do think Gonzaga's the best team in the country. I'm going to be honest, guys. So I think that at the end of the day, Gonzaga's going to come away with the W, but I think we're going to get a great game tonight.
If I could piggyback off what Tate said there, I think one thing that's interesting about this matchup is, beyond them being the best two teams, is I think they're going to have been – this is going to be one of the most well-scouted national title games we've ever seen, because typically you go into a Final Four, you're not entirely sure which team you're going to play. And, you know, you're planning ahead and you're kind of scouting them a little bit. But in this instance, Gonzaga and Baylor were supposed to play already this season. And they kind of already started scouting. Like you said, Jake, this is like this is 2 years in the making. Both these coaches know each other very well. One of the video coordinator, I believe, on Baylor is a Gonzaga alum who knows the program well. So I anticipate that as well. Like this is going to be a chess match, but also the players are incredible. I mean, you think about like Corey Kispert is the face of Gonzaga basketball, and he was the first team All-American. Jared Butler is the first team All-American for Baylor, and yet neither one of those guys are currently the best players on their team, because Drew Timmy's playing out of his mind and Davion Mitchell's playing out of his mind. So that's the level of talent we're talking about. Meanwhile, Jalen Suggs was like the MVP of this game. Like the talent is insane. The coaching is going to be insane. I cannot be more excited.
Yeah, Suggs was unreal. I mean, that shot had people. I have friends that aren't huge basketball fans, and we're still freaking out. Again, you're listening to Mark Titus and Tate Frazier. They host the Titus and Tate podcast. Now, I just quickly, a lot of folks here, especially we're in Washington State, plenty familiar with Gonzaga, less familiar with Baylor. So even though this is kind of the title game that people could have hoped for last season, would it have happened? And the two best teams in the country heading into this, there's still some people that maybe don't really know who to watch. So what's one particular matchup that both of you are eyeing in this game?
Yeah, I think if you look at the point guard situation, I don't even know who Baylor's point guard is at this point, because Jared Butler's technically the point guard, but Davion Mitchell is kind of become a playmaker throughout the NCAA tournament. So I think Jalen Suggs on Davion Mitchell, I imagine that's going to be the matchup to watch, because both of those guys are just incredible. I mean, Jalen Suggs, he speaks for himself. You guys know him well. Davion Mitchell, he was a guy that I was asked in January. I was doing a show, and I was asked to name a guy who is probably going to be like a second-round pick, might go undrafted, that I like. And I said Davion Mitchell. I was like, I don't think he's on anyone's draft boards, but I think he's really good. And now you look up, and like people have him in the lottery. People are saying he's a top-10 pick just because he's been playing so well down the stretch. So I have my eye on that, like in terms of firepower. And then the other thing to watch is Drew Timmy of Gonzaga, obviously, is awesome. You guys know him well up in Washington. Baylor, I'm not sure, really has a guy who can match up with him. And no one does, I guess. That's why he's been so good all tournament. But that's going to be that's the one weakness that Baylor has, is their big guys aren't necessarily scorers. They're decent defenders, but that's going to be an interesting matchup, because I imagine Gonzaga is going to give the ball to Timmy a lot, and Baylor is not going to be giving the ball to their big guys quite as much.
I'll jump on this. I would just say, I mean, guards can avoid each other, you know what I mean, with switches and things like that. Big guys have, you know, like, they're in the same area, they're in the same space. So, like, whoever Timmy's matching up against, that's the real matchup to watch. And I think Timmy has that advantage. We saw him go up against, a potential number one pick in Evan Mobley. And, you know, we saw what he was able to do in that situation. And I think Timmy's the real X factor, whatever you want to call in this game. And I wouldn't be surprised at the end if Drew Timmy is the MOP. Of this entire tournament, or this Final Four.
Well, that would be definitely exciting. That would mean that the Zags are winning this game. But I want to ask you guys, what was a better development that happened over the weekend? The amazing game between UCLA and Gonzaga, or the fact that you guys were right about Houston? Finally, you guys get to say that Houston is overrated.
So
the entire time I was watching you guys, I was picturing Dennis Green in my mind. They are who they thought they were. So how are you guys feeling about that? Finally,
congratulations,
Houston is
by
out.
The way.
Yeah, that was my thing. The reason I think I was so frustrated about Houston is because all the things that people say about Gonzaga nationally, and by people I mean the people that don't pay attention, that don't bother trying to watch Gonzaga on TV or whatever, and they just kind of like have it in their mind that Gonzaga doesn't play anybody, that they're not that talented, that all the narratives that everyone in Washington heard forever. All of those things in my mind applied to this year's Houston team, and that's why I found it so funny, because I was like, one of the teams in the Final Four that everyone's saying, you know, Gonzaga is the team that are like, yeah, they're undefeated, but do they play anybody? And it's like, yes. Did you see that non-conference schedule? It's crazy. They're beating everybody by a lot. Whatever. And all of those points, I was like, Houston is the team you should be saying this about. They played like two NCAA tournament teams the entire season. They lost to East Carolina, for God's sakes, who's terrible. They lost to Tulsa, who's not very good either. Their whole brand of basketball was like muck it up and try to make like one or two plays down the stretch to win the game. So I was on that train all season. I have nothing against the Houston basketball program per se, but like this team I didn't feel like was very good. And then in the NCAA tournament run, they played nothing but double-digit seeds to get to the Final Four. And it was very frustrating for me because I was looking like an idiot because Houston made the Final Four, but I knew deep down they weren't that good. And then, to watch Baylor just blow them out and sit there and say, yes, I knew this all along. It was very rewarding.
You said that you had nothing against Houston personally. I actually think you should like pick a feud with someone. I mean, do you have an existing feud? It makes for kind of this
that's
spicy.
What we do. Just
that's
so you guys know, our show, we do that. We pick certain people or certain cities or whatever. We just pick fights.
We have a current feud. It's one-sided, but it's fine, against Troy Aikman, our only enemy of the show, and also the city of Wichita. Those are our only two feuds right now. We try to keep it minimal, no more than two at a time.
Well, maybe I'll start a feud with Houston. I'm okay. I mean, their coach, Kelvin Sampson, used to coach at Indiana. I was born and raised in Indiana, and I grew up an Indiana fan. So he got fired from Indiana for recruiting violations, and it kind of sank the program for a little bit. So I guess maybe there's
roots of a feud there.
Feud.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Now, one of the things that I was watching with Gonzaga that really was amazing to me was just – you see how deep this team is, and you look at somebody like Corey Kispert, and you guys mentioned it earlier, how, look, he's your All-American on this team, and yet he's the one that wasn't really a factor. He had a nice dunk, he made some nice shots at different points, but he wasn't the X factor in the game at all, and they have multiple guys that can handle the ball. They have just a variety of different things that they can do. Do you foresee them being able to get Kispert back in this game? Do you think he becomes more of a factor, or do you think the team has evolved and shifted a little bit?
I will say this. I mean, I think Corey Kispert will be fine, and I think Corey Kispert will have a very good game tonight. I'm not going to say that Corey Kispert is going to be the star of the game, because I think it's going to be Drew Timmy, and that's by, you know, design of matchups more than anything. I will say this. Jalen Suggs, I mean, for the fact that he's the highest-rated recruit, the fact that Mark Few was flying to Minneapolis to watch this kid play football and play quarterback and basically risk his basketball career, and then he comes and in his first season is everything and more you could ever imagine. And in the biggest moment on the biggest stage, when you need someone to be that winning player, for him to step up and be the quote unquote, you know, the guy for this team was, I mean, honestly, almost too poetic to be real. It felt like, and going into Monday night, I don't know what Kispert's going to do per se, but I do know in winning time at the end of the game, Jalen Suggs is going to have the ball in his hand. And I think that's good news for Gonzaga fans.
I think Kispert, like, not needing Kispert is exactly what makes Gonzaga. It's not just that they're so deep. It's also that I think all those guys, you talk about, like, the four best players on Gonzaga, because Ai is another guy who is awesome,
yep,
but is, like, the fourth best player on a team. And I think they're all okay with that, and that's what makes them so good. We see that around the country so often there are teams that are loaded with talent, and the guy who's, quote-unquote, the fourth best, third best, whatever it might be, is uncomfortable with that. And he's like, I should be the guy. And there's the tug of war of who should get the ball and all that kind of stuff. That has not been a problem for Gonzaga all year. It will not be a problem tonight. And if you ask Corey Kispert, like, hey, man, how this game's going to shake out, you're only going to get three shots. But, you know, like, Drew Timmy's going to score 40 points and we're going to win. Would you be okay with that? He'd be like, absolutely. I want to win a national title. And I feel like every single guy believes in that and they bought in. And that's part of what makes this team so special, honestly.
Now, I got to follow you guys on social media a little bit, and if you guys aren't doing that, make sure you guys go follow these guys on social media, on Twitter, check them out. But you guys got to do a lot of fun stuff in Indiana, not just go and watch the games and do your shows live there and all that, but you guys got to do a cool little field trip. You guys actually got to go to the gym of the high school gym of Hoosiers. What was that like? What was that experience like?
Well, I'll let Tate take this one, because this was I was trying to show off. I'm from Indiana, and I grew up there, and I was just trying to show Tate a good time. So I'm curious to hear what his thoughts were.
Yeah, I'm from North Carolina, so, I mean, look, there are a lot of churches in the Bible Belt, but going to these gyms in Indiana, it's like going into a church or a sanctuary or something like that. You know, it's an amazing experience that obviously hits you when you walk in. You feel the air in the gym. And, you know, it's crazy with the Hoosiers gym. They have, like, you know, a basket with the original peach basket, you know, that's hanging up there that they bring down, and people, they said Spalding could come back, you know, for their 120-year anniversary to, like, shoot original basketballs on that basket. Obviously, we know the story of Hoosiers is incredible. But just to be there in the place where it all took place was an experience unlike any other. And then, you know, Titus and I went to the Basketball Hall of Fame in Indiana, which I had told Titus on the record that I thought it was better than the Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts. So just in general, the Indiana basketball, you know, the saying is that 49 other states are just basketball. It is true in Indiana that they live for this. It is a religion of sorts, and to be a part of it was great.
I'm happy to report, by the way, that we ran the picket fence in the Hoosiers gym, and I made the shot.
Good. You have to. How do you not go into that gym and not run the picket fence?
Hey, last question for us here. If the Zags do win tonight, what does it mean for their program?
Another subplot of this game tonight is that both programs are kind of on this 20-year arc of looking to culminate with a national title, and that's kind of the only thing missing. And I think certainly Gonzaga has had more success over the course of those 20 years than Baylor. So in my mind, like, Gonzaga needs it or is more deserving of it, if that makes any kind of sense. So, obviously it means for the program, it's like validation. I think it's been an uphill climb. I think even getting to this point, and anybody who pays attention and covers the sport knows exactly how good Gonzaga is, not just this team, but the program. But yet there's still like a fight you have to fight for, like, casual fans or whatever, because you don't have a national title. And that's ultimately, for better or worse, what people care about is how many national titles have you won? And Gonzaga has not won one yet. So, I think that's awesome. But, like, in the bigger picture, I really do feel like it's an inspirational story for other programs around the country, that if this tiny school in Eastern Washington can just pop up out of nowhere, and in the span of, I mean, 1999 was the first tournament, or 95 was the first tournament there. It's been like 25 years since they made their very first tournament 25 years ago. So if you're a tiny school all over the country, you kind of have no excuse, or you can kind of look at that and be like, that could be us. I mean, granted, a lot of things have to go right, but, you know, that's what makes college basketball so cool to me, because that can't happen really in a lot of other sports where you're just like, well, let's,
you know, we're gonna make our first tournament, and then 25 years from now, we're gonna be considered like a blue blood to some people, you know, and
yeah.
we're gonna be undefeated, trying to win a national title and all that kind of stuff. So, I'm certainly pulling for Gonzaga. I like Baylor. If Baylor won, I wouldn't be sad about it. But watching the arc of Gonzaga and just how steadily the climb has been from, you know, the underdog to the Adam Morrison era, where they're not favorites, but they're kind of good enough to compete with everyone, to, you know, even like the 2013 kind of era where they are favorites, but they're still not good enough to like really get over the hump. And then to now where it's like, man, who knows? Like next year Gonzaga might be even better than this year. It's crazy. So it's been a fun ride, and fingers crossed they can finish it off tonight.
They are far.
Yeah, and I will say,
go ahead.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I was going to say, well, they climbed the ladder, right? 2017, you know, they faced by North Carolina Tar Heels. They lose that game, and now they're due at this point, right? They've already – this is Baylor's first Final Four since, you know, 1950 or whatever it was. So I feel like at this point, Gonzaga's a team that they're going to get their due. And then if you go undefeated this season, it's forever. Obviously, you're the greatest team of the 21st century. So as far as the impact on Gonzaga, they are officially a blue blood.
They are Fox Sports' Mark Titus and Tate Frazier, hosts of the Titus and Tate podcast. I know that we said, as a show, Jake and I only have two enemies, which is Troy Aikman and the city of Wichita. If you don't go download their podcast, if you aren't already subscribed to it, we're adding you guys to the list, too. You need to go listen to it. It's one of our favorites. We've loved having you guys on. It's been a blast. Thanks so much for helping us preview tonight's game. It's a big one for us here locally.
Thanks for having us. I love doing the show, so hopefully you guys have us back. We'd love to do it again.
Yes, all right, count on it. Count on it.
Same thing. We'll find more enemies. If you don't listen to Jake and Stacey, you're our enemy as well.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Let's go. All right, you guys have fun tonight.
Thanks, guys. Yep,
thank See you guys.
All right, it is time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacey.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
First down, Jake. Why do you not expect the Seahawks to make a free agent move before the draft?
At this point, the market has stated very clearly that there is a hold on the free agent market. That as of right now, you're in a certain point where you are assessing your team. You're looking at the holes that you have on your roster, and you are trying to fill them with upgraded talent via the draft, via cheap, inexpensive type of talent that you can get through the draft. And now you're at a point where a lot of the guys that you see on the free agent market, they're either in their 30s, they've had injury history. There are certain aspects about these players that the NFL is sitting there and saying, look, we know you're talented, but we are going to hang on after the draft to see if we can fill these voids there, or we're going to give you a call after the draft, and your market is going to be at a set value. So for anybody like Richard Sherman, Cameron Hayward, KJ Wright, unfortunately, they're in a spot where their market is not going to necessarily grow, expand, get bigger. It is going to be a very limited market for them, and their price point is not going to be as high as what they may have thought or have hoped for. So you're not going to see any big contracts being signed up to this point and after the draft. So when it comes to the Seahawks being able to address continual needs with Quentin Dunbar, KJ Wright, certain guys like that, I expect all that to happen after the draft and not before.
Second down. Stacey, Quentin Dunbar, KJ Wright, and Jadeveon Clowney all remain unsigned. Who would you like to see in a Seahawks uniform in 2021?
Now, you can make a case for Quentin Dunbar because he'll presumably be affordable, and the Seahawks at corner are going to face some of their biggest, well, I guess their biggest questions heading into training camp and the start of the new season. That's where they're thinnest right now. You can look at the defensive end position and say, yeah, they could use Clowney there to see what he can bring, but you guys, sometimes you make emotional and not always rational decisions. I really want to see KJ Wright back. I want to see KJ Wright retire with the Seahawks. I want to see him play out the full entirety of his career with Seattle. Not only that, but I think KJ Wright still brings a ton to this team. And if what Jake is saying is correct and that the Seahawks are probably going to wait until either a lot closer to the draft or until after the draft to make a move, then I think that suddenly that becomes a much more affordable option, and you're getting a savvy, tested veteran back at a price that's really team-friendly.
third down. Jake, over the weekend, a lot was made about what ESPN analyst Dan Orlovsky had to say about Justin Fields. Was it wrong?
Yeah, we even had some ESPN on ESPN crime here. We had Kirk Herbstreit stepping in, obviously a notable Ohio State alum who was giving Dan Orlovsky a hard time when Orlovsky made original comments about things that he was hearing from team sources, telling him, scouts, coaches, that they were concerned about Justin Fields' work ethic, his ability to progress through reads and all those types of things, and there was a negative report. Dan Orlovsky goes back and says, hey, after I said that, I went and poured through the film, and none of these things add up to me. And he was getting a lot of flack for it, saying, well, then why would you say that at all if you hadn't fully done the research? So, although I understand why people are coming after Dan Orlovsky, Orlovsky at the same time is just reporting what he has heard, not necessarily his opinion of Justin Fields based off of that. So I think that in this industry, you have to have room for both. If you're reporting what you're hearing and you make that very clear, there you go. But if you're making your own definitive statement about Justin Fields personally, so, Stacey, if I was making my own personal statement about Justin Fields, I would not reference what I have heard, but I would reference all the sum of its parts. The film that I've watched, the information I've gathered, all of those things to come to my own conclusion. And that, to me, is the part in this process that doesn't happen enough or often enough. We often run with narratives or what other people say to us in just a offhanded conversation instead of doing the homework first. So, again, there has to be room for both because you have to report on what end what sources are telling you, but you do have to come up with your own definitive statement about whether you think it's true or not and what you actually believe about the particular player. And we oftentimes in this industry don't get to the second or latter or most important aspect of the evaluation. Therefore, you have a lot of misses or a lot of mischaracterizations of a particular player.
Fourth down. Jake, how do scouts and teams evaluate versus the media?
There's a big difference in the way that teams and scouts evaluate for the draft versus the media. Have you ever, you hear the term, oh, the stock is rising? That's not necessarily the case. The way that teams approach this is they have their own board, and you often hear, we've heard John Schneider say this, look, we have X amount of players that we actually deem a first-round grade. And those amount of players could be anywhere from, let's say, 10 to 20 guys, right? And there's 32 picks in the first round. So not everybody is a first-round graded talent in the NFL or scouting evaluation eye, whereas in the media, we do a bunch of mock drafts, we talk through things, and I think that we do it for more of an entertainment value, whereas scouts and teams, they are having to look at things in a much more realistic aspect, go figure, right? But they are more focused on what the evaluation or the projection of that player is going to be 2-3 years from now. Where does that fit in? How does that all come together? And it's much, much different than the way that mock drafters and everybody in the media side of things evaluate and put their big boards up. It would surprise a lot of people what it looks like from a scouting perspective in an actual NFL war rooms and boards.
Our Arizona coach, Adia Barnes, already had plenty of fans, but she just gained a lot more after her Final Four post-game comments. Plus, is Aaron Rodgers throwing shade at Russell Wilson? You take a listen next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
This is The Timeline on Jake and Stacy, reading you the top stories that you're going to see on your own timelines. Let's go ahead and get started with a story about the Arizona Wildcats. Bear down, Curtis. Head coach Adia Barnes refused to apologize for comments made during her team's post-game huddle after upsetting UConn in the Final Four. Take a listen.
I'm just myself. I don't really think of, like, it's not, there was no strategy to it. There isn't no, plan to be a certain way. It's just, I just do what I feel, I guess. which is good and bad because he saw at the end of the game, I honestly had a moment with my team and I thought it was like a more intimate huddle. And I said to my team something that I truly felt and I know they felt. And it just like appeared different on TV, but I'm not apologizing for it because I don't feel like I need to apologize. It's what I felt with my team at the moment. And it's, I wouldn't take it back. We've gone to war together. We look around the room and we looked around the circle. We believe in each other. So I'm in those moments and that's how I am. So I don't apologize for doing that, but, I'm just me and I have to just be me.
And you know what? She shouldn't apologize because Barnes came, I don't want to say under fire. I think that there was a large percentage of college sports fans, but also either Arizona fans, casual hoops fans, who were like, I love to see this. I love to see fire from a coach. She was in a huddle that presumably she's thinking, like she kind of hints out here, is somewhat private. She's trying to rally up her team. They're in a game against number one UConn. They're leading by 10. That was the final score, 69-59. At this time, she's looking around, she's pointing to people and basically saying, hey, all these doubters out here, all these skeptics. And then she kind of, you know,
forget everybody.
Forget
but
everybody.
F word.
Which is
forget
not.
Forget the haters.
Which is not unusual in any way for a coach, a college coach, to get their team fired up. Think of not long ago with Ed Ogeron saying, Roll Tide, what? And then throwing in another, forget them, forget you. And so everyone was fired up about that, thought it was really awesome, stoking the flames. And Curtis, you pointed this out. And Jake, you've been in these shoes. When you're a recruit seeing this, that's something that gets you fired up.
Oh, as an alum, that got me fired
up.
I would run through a brick wall for Adia Barnes whenever Curtis, she asked me to.
Curtis, go ahead and say what you said to us. Go
I
ahead
would
and step.
Die for Adia Barnes, okay? If that's my coach telling my team to just block out the haters and let's go out there and try and win a national championship and go and beat the model of consistency in your sport, who wouldn't want that?
Shame on anyone who is trying to shame Adia Barnes and saying that that's not a classy way to handle it. I don't know what it's like to rally up your troops.
I'm sorry, but a classy way to handle this? Like, what are we talking about?
Right?
Are we in dining etiquette here? And you've never been, you've never been in a locker room.
Yeah.
You've never had these exchanges before because this isn't anything new or anything different. I mean, this is something that you feel the passion from Adia Barnes, you feel the energy, and you feel the moment. And look, these are things that have been said countless times by other teams, other places. They just happen to catch this one behind the scenes. And like Adia said, like, look, I thought this was an intimate moment just between me and my players.
Yes.
And I don't regret a word of what I said because she meant it. And I don't think she should take it back either. I don't think so at all.
And
so,
guess what? They beat UConn, and the players are getting fired up in this moment. When you watch the video, first of all, there's no sound. When you watch the video, you can kind of tell what she's saying. The players around her freak out.
Right. Here's my thing. In today's sports, we want an apology for everything. I don't understand it. How about if you want an apology or if you want to go after somebody because you heard the words that she said, why don't you go after the broadcast and say, hey, maybe we shouldn't have the mic on these coaches, or maybe you should be ready to hit that button. We have a dump button here. We never use it, obviously, on this show. But if it was there for whatever reason, they've used it in the, for Wyman and Jim Moore back in the day. that button was hot and ready. You know, how about you better be on the trigger on that moment? Like, that to me, don't put that on the coaches or the players in the moment. They're just being them in their normal situation. So I don't get that one.
Next story, you guys all remember Adam Morrison, a former Zags star who suffered a devastating loss, his Zags team to UCLA. He became kind of famous after that moment for up until then being this like lovable,
one of the
more of an underdog
memes.
Guy. Exactly. And then, of course, he starts crying on the court. My theory, by the way, is that if this would have happened today, we would have an entirely different conversation about it. And it would be all about like why it should be OK for male athletes to break down. Anyway, it's a separate issue. At the time, he was completely panned for it. Well, guess what? Adam Morrison, I can imagine a lot of that fire, a lot of that passion left, and it probably felt pretty good to see the Zags defeat UCLA. Here's him on the radio call.
To the right side of the floor, defended by Kispert now, drives, leans in, the runner comes up short, choosing the rebounds and puts it in. We're tied at 90, 3 seconds left. Here's Suggs the other way, pull up, three for the win! Yes! Yes! Set yes! of the championship game! He knocked it down from 40 at the buzzer!
Yes! It's amazing.
That, that was a broadcast. It's hard to pick up everything that was going on. Obviously, Morrison's going crazy, but that was a direct reflection of what was going on in my house at the time as we were watching that game. It went absolutely bonkers. Our family went nuts. All the little kids and the babies were looking around like, what is going on? Why are my parents and why is my family freaking out and yelling at the top of their lungs? Oh my gosh, that was incredible. I haven't had that much fun watching a game in quite some time. I enjoy watching Seahawks games and Mariners games, but the stress level is way too high during those games. With Gonzaga, it was fun, it was stressful, but man, I just enjoyed that game. It was such a fun game.
Both teams were also so good. Like, I wanted the Zags to win, but UCLA was playing out of their minds. The Zags were playing out of their minds. Whoever won that would have deserved to win it. That's what it was. There wasn't like a bad call. I know people can say what they want about the charge, but there wasn't like a per se a bad call. It was just a great game. All right, last one here. We got about 30 seconds. Aaron Rodgers potentially throwing some shade at Russell Wilson here. Take a listen.
Well, when you say things like that, then people, he just said it's not in his hands. He might be right. Like, things get misinterpreted. Wouldn't you like to just proclaim, I'm there. I'm your guy. I want to keep throwing for Lombardi Avenue all day.
Ken, you and I both know that's not how it works.
No. Like Russell Wilson. He just answered a question.
Yeah. I'm not, you know, necessarily going to approach it to, like, how that some of that stuff came out. But look, like I said last year, you know, there's things that are just out of my control.
Now, Aaron Rodgers telling Kenny Mayne, I'm not taking the Russ approach to offseason questions.
I don't really take that as really throwing shade. I mean, Rodgers has done that himself. I mean, he sat there and said after the post-game press conference, did he not say basically the same thing? Right? He said, well, it's not up to me. It's out of my hands. Basically saying what Russ said, that it's up to the Seahawks. Aaron Rodgers saying that about Green Bay. And he also went on further to say, in the interview as well, that he thinks that he threw a wrench in the franchise's plans with the way that he played, saying that the team was wanting and ready to move on from me. Like, so Aaron Rodgers has done his fair share of throwing shade at the team or whatever the case may be. So, you know, look, I think for him in this situation, he has commented on his situation with the Green Bay Packers plenty of times, and I think they're in a good spot. So therefore, yeah, why would you go and try and say something like that?
Do you think you have what it takes to pick the winner for this year's Masters? Do you, Jake?
No, I don't think I do.
That's fair, that's fair.
I honestly, I don't know.
Well, you guys listening might, which is why what you need to do is head to 710sports.com/win, guess the champion and their winning score, and you could end up winning the ultimate Premier Golfing Pass. That's a round of golf for you and three friends at 10 Premier Golf Courses. Details at 710sports.com/win. All right, Antonio Brown once again being linked to the Seahawks. Do you guys want to see him here? Text 710-710. We'll talk that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Wide receiver Antonio Brown, currently a free agent and most formerly with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, has been once again linked to Seattle. Now, he had been linked to Seattle last season. Russell Wilson was reportedly an advocate for him to come here. He had worked out with Russell Wilson, ended up choosing the Buccaneers, went there with Tom Brady and won a Super Bowl with them. Well, he's back available on the market. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers have brought back essentially all of their 22 starters on offense and defense from that Super Bowl team. So Antonio Brown, I mean, they're looking like a team that's bringing everyone back and getting everything shored up. But he could still return to Seattle. I would wager that there's still some interest there on the part of Russell Wilson, who is going to want to win a Super Bowl, once again push for that, and can't have felt good watching Tampa Bay and Antonio Brown in that one. Problem is, Jake, I don't want to see Antonio Brown here. I am all for second and third and fourth chances for people. I don't think people are definitively bad people, and I am all for stories of redemption and chances at redemption. I don't really want to see Antonio Brown in Seattle. And I got to say, the text line, siding with me on that one. Not siding against you, because you actually haven't taken the opposite side. I'm making it about me.
Yeah, of course. It is. Once you have the people with you,
exactly.
You got to keep them there. Although I will say that Stacey is not a benevolent leader.
No, absolutely not.
Definitely not. So just be careful.
If you guys know anything about Daenerys Targaryen, it's a woman after my own heart.
I look at this Antonio Brown situation, and it's intriguing because you sit there and you look at it from just a standpoint of where they are currently at. And they are in a clear need of a third receiver. Freddie Swain, John Ursua, we could go down the list of guys that could potentially step up. Gerald Everett could very much easily be your third receiver. But if you're going to be as explosive an offense as you're hoping to be, you need someone truly dynamic to complement DK Metcalf, sure, Tyler Lockett, and stretch the field. And that's something that they're looking for. So when you talk about it from just a pure football standpoint, Antonio Brown makes a lot of sense in terms of the way he plays the game, his unique abilities and traits, and he showed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that he could be a third receiver, that he wasn't going to cause a lot of drama on the field, in practice, in the building, right, in that role, that he wasn't going to command to be the number one receiver. He was productive, 45 receptions, 483 yards. He has, four touchdowns in the regular season. So from that standpoint, you can see why you would go down that road. On the other side of things, there's just so much that encompasses the situation with Antonio Brown, the background and everything, that you would love to not have them go down this road, right? You would love to find any other way for them to be an explosive offense, to add a third target without bringing Antonio Brown, right?
I would like want to root for someone. Like, I would like to get satisfaction from rooting for someone instead of feeling guilty about it.
Right. And I think that is where everybody feels, right? So if they do walk down that road, I think it's going to be because of the fit, of the background of what he was able to do last year with Tampa Bay. And then I do think that when you look at what Antonio Brown brings to the table, it makes sense. However, I fully believe that you're not going to see Antonio Brown get signed until the summer. Like, there's no reason to, get into a bidding war for Antonio Brown.
There's a large number of free agents that remain available that I thought might be signed. Even guys like Richard Sherman, who are in their 30s,
right,
still unsigned.
Yes, absolutely. And Antonio Brown, even though he is a talented guy, because of all of the extracurricular things that are out there, You know you're going to get him at a very inexpensive price. He's not going to be someone that's highly sought after. You know that the Seahawks, Tampa Bay, and maybe even the Ravens, there's really only a handful of teams that would be even interested in AB at this point. And I think that the best case scenario in my mind, Stacey, is that they go and get one of these really talented players in the draft. I think that there's a few receivers out there that really make a lot of sense. And we're going to profile these guys all month long, mm-hmm, and give you every receiver name that makes sense for this group. Because there are guys that all sorts of shapes and sizes that bring unique dynamics and traits to this, that could potentially bring to this offense, that I think could do a lot of the same things that Antonio Brown could do for this offense and be younger and inexpensive and also not be as big of a headache or a worry off the field for your organization, for your fan base. So that really is where I come down on this with Antonio Brown, is that if you're going to sign him, it has to be one of those things where you are putting faith in the organization, in Russell Wilson, and everybody around him, that they know that there isn't going to be anything that's going to embarrass this franchise, embarrass this fan base, But at the same time, can you find another alternative outside of Antonio Brown? And that's where I think they're going to look at first and foremost, with Antonio Brown knowing that he's on the back burner and he isn't going to be signed anytime soon.
All right. Like we said, we are giving away those Mariners tickets to tomorrow's game every hour, and we want to send you to tomorrow night's Mariners game. So in 1 minute, if you're listening on the radio, or 30 seconds if you're on the stream, we need a low number, Jake. Caller number
2.
Caller number 2. 206-421-3776. 206-421-3776.
You better get that handbrake.
3776 or 866-979-3776. Caller number 2 wins a pair of tickets to see the Mariners take on the White Sox tomorrow night. We're giving away a pair of tickets every hour all day. So stay tuned to 710 ESPN Seattle for your next chance to win. Baseball is back at T-Mobile Park. Get your tickets at Mariners.com. Coming up next, Jake mentioned those Seahawks draft profiles. Well, we're getting things started.